B-Pod Studios.
It's the Anthony Gargano Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
All right, let me get Aaron back because Aaron was patiently waiting. Big Aaron.
Yo, I'm still here, man. I ain't got nothing to do. I'm just riding around all day, brother.
How you doing?
It's good, man. I try to take care of myself, look out for others, you know. Try to do your best out here. That's all you can, man.
I
ain't self-quarantined. I got to get out here. So, you know, it is what
but
it is.
You got to work, you know.
Again,
you got to earn.
Yes, sir. So, real quick with Buck. Joe Buck, I like him, but he doesn't really show a lot of emotion when it comes to Philadelphia to me. Listen to him on some other calls. He get a little hype when it's other teams. That's the only beef I got with him. He's kind of subdued when it's a big moment, but in some other aspects or some other games, he's kind of, you can hear him and he's kind of juicy. So that's the kind of beef I got against
really?
Him.
Really? So you
yeah.
actually
pull up some
this.
Stuff. Pull up some stuff and see it. Because I pulled it up on YouTube, man. He's kind of like, you know, you can see him bust out. You can see, he's not overly hype, but you can see the hypeness in him. He's kind of subdued when he's talking about the Eagles.
Even that call,
the 7-5, that was stairs through that thing out of the ballpark. It could a little more excitement would have helped. But, I kind of fight with that. That could be my Philly bias. All right, I admit that.
I think it is.
Okay. I'll tell the truth.
I just think only because, like, first of all, that's the kind of dude he is. He's a dry dude. He's not one of these, you know, emotional guys, right? Like, you know, he doesn't give you the emotional call.
Right.
He's a dry guy, but I think he's like a pro.
Okay.
Anyway, whatever.
All right, get back to my hate. Okay.
Yes.
And I left off. My hate went down for Boston when they went to number three because, you know, beat L.A., man, just took it to another level. What other team did you hear beat another team, the opposing team that you hate? So now I go to Dallas. I can't stand it. You know how I hate Dallas.
I hate them to death. Yes.
I hate them to death. But when they was winning, they had three. I knew the Eagles couldn't beat them. But the Giants have won Super Bowls subpar, 9-7. Why couldn't we win any Super Bowls during that time?
That's true.
Of me being a hater on them because they went in Super Bowls with that dreck of a team, and we can't win with a great team that we had. The defense everywhere and playing good ball, getting to the NFC Championship games, losing. That really put something in my heart. And this Strahan at his Hall of Fame speech, this is John Runyon.
Yeah, that's true.
I can't stand the Giants. I hate everybody in our division. I hate them all equally. But the Giants just do something to me, and their fans are smug.
Interesting. You hate the
They're
Giants.
Very smug, man. They walk away. I got a lot of Giants fans.
Yeah, they're smug peeps.
I agree with that.
They're
very smug. And they're the
that's the Yankee. The Yankee Giant thing is real. I would agree with that. Yeah.
And then Jaws kills me every time. I love Jaws. The New York football Giants. Oh, Jaws, stop. They're the New York Giants, man. They didn't
the New York football Giants.
It just bugs me to no end, man. I mean, I've got equal opportunity hate, man, but the Giants, I can't stand them, man. I can't stand them. They're very dry when they won the Super Bowl. I mean, Eli Manning throwing stuff off of people's hat, off the, you know, man, they just, it's just boring. 9-7 teams winning. I mean, where's our love at? Why couldn't we win the Super Bowl during that time?
That's
I was hurt then, but see, I got better since we won the Super Bowl, but I can't stand the Giants. And I hate Dallas, but I can't stand the Giants. And I hate the Celtics. But I give them a pass to a certain extent.
You can't give the Celtics a pass. It's Boston.
Man, beat L.A. was like, classic.
Okay, I agree. Because ultimately, we're cousins with them. But we're the cousins. We're not lovey cousins. We're the hate cousins. You know what I mean? Like, we're the next door. We're the rivals, the ultimate rivals. Aaron.
Man, I think that's New York. We're right next to them.
Yeah, but again, they're close, New York, man.
And I lived in Jersey for a little while too, so that
yeah.
I got
but
a
New York is so vast. It's so big. Boston is the original. It was us. We were the two settlements.
Right. I get you. I get you. Man. You know, whatever. I get you. I
it's
get
good
you.
Stuff,
man.
I love it. Listen, be careful. All right. Hanging out there.
So another tweet just came in.
Another one?
This one from Sven. The Jackson, DeSean Jackson miracle in the Meadowlands call is an all-time worst moment for Joe Buck and Philly sports.
I don't understand that.
I'll play it right now. This was
all
a
right,
great
on.
Call.
It's 12:03, and you're listening to 97.5 The Fanatic WPEN. Burlington, Philadelphia, broadcasting from the Xfinity Studios, only from Comcast. We're at Beasley Media Group Station. All right, Sven, listen, and you tell me this is bad? Take a listen.
It's a line drive kick. Jackson bobbles it and now has to try and recover. DeSean Jackson gets a block. Are you kidding? DeSean Jackson still not in and now for the touchdown, no flags. Unbelievable.
Well, I mean, what's wrong with that call? And again, remember, he's doing it for TV. So you're watching the play. When you're broadcasting for television, you're not as descriptive because you're watching the play.
Yeah, guys like Kevin Harlan who are doing it on the radio have to do, he's at the 40, he's at the right. 30, he's at the 20.
But when you're broadcasting for television, it goes back to Summerall, Aikman, Irvin, touchdown, Cowboys. You know, that's why, I mean, that's a great call. What's wrong with that call? He was excited, too. Are you kidding? Unbelievable. What's wrong with that call, Sven? Sven, you got a call, man. This is a truism? See, I always thought it was a few guys here or there. Just a couple of, like, people didn't get it. But this thing is real? This Joe Buck 8? I'm asking you, Junis.
I don't understand. But it is real. People don't like him. I just DM Sven. We're going to try to get him on.
Can you put the poll? Could you make a separate poll?
Yeah. What, do you not like Joe Buck?
No, but what don't you like? I don't know, what don't you like about it? I don't understand. Like, I want something. I don't know. I want something, like, can you figure out, you know, what is it? Like, what's the problem? Who are their favorite announcers? National broadcasters. You know, Al Michaels is half comatose sometimes. Again, that Super Bowl was horrible. And I love Al Michaels.
The Hail Mary. And then he didn't realize it was dropped. And he goes, oh, there it is. Eagles win. Like, yes. It wasn't like for the first time. No.
Right.
It was just, Eagles won.
Yeah, come on, man. That's not cool. Let's go to Vince. You're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Vince.
Hey, Hank. Good afternoon now.
What's up, buddy?
Hanging in there. I'm looking forward to that 44-6 replay because I was at that game and I kept thinking of all the stuff beforehand, about all the things that had to happen for the Eagles to even have a chance to go to the playoffs. That's what makes that day so amazing. But I want to go back earlier when you talk about, like, you know, people rooting on ethnic grounds or ethnic identity stuff.
Yes.
That's funny because my dad was from Italy and he didn't know anything about American sports. But as I gradually introduced him to him, I'll admit, like, he became interested when when he hooked on to, like, say, the Italian guys on various teams. Like, for instance, Tommy Lasorda was the face of the Dodgers to him. And I actually have a picture of him with my dad. This is when Lasorda was promoting, like, his wine label, and he came down to South Philly one night, you know, to do it. And I always got a kick out of that. In fact, he tried to talk to my dad in Italian when I told him he was from Italy. It was kind of funny, actually.
Yeah.
It was pretty decent, actually. It was a little rough, but it was funny. You know, same thing with, like, you know, to meet, you know, he associated Tony La Russa with the Cardinals and Torrey with the Yankees. You know, so, but, I mean, he didn't know Joe DiMaggio and stuff.
But
he didn't root for
them. Yeah, know, the rule is you got to root for your home team.
Oh, no, he definitely was a, you know, he rooted for the Philadelphia teams because he knew I was a fan, obviously. Yeah. But he always busts my chops to say the Phillies lost 20-0. It's like, oh, mamma mia, you know, what happened kind of thing, you know. Right. And same thing with, like, you know, again, that's why I'm not a Notre Dame fan, you know, with, like, and the Celtics with, like, you know, anything Irish. You know, like you just said, the two-streeters and the Grace Ferry crowd. You know, anything Irish they rooted for, you know, it's like I couldn't.
Well, right. And that was, now again, that's now old, right? Like, yeah. So that's now like 25 years old, 30 years old.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that, you know, I mean, obviously it's changed, but.
Oh, yeah. No, I just never got into the whole touchdown Jesus thing, too. Yeah. You know? But the other thing, too, and I hate to admit this, but I'm not a Joe Buck fan. I don't hate him, but I don't.
You know, I love the guy.
No, you know what it is? But see, I know, now this is the thing that bothers me, and I know a lot of people disagree with this. I know you're broadcasting for TV and stuff, but it used to bother me, say during baseball, a guy fouls it back, you know, he just says strike one. I want to hear him say he fouls it back, like say if I step out of the room for an instant. I want to, you know, just something like that. I mean, I get the whole thing you're doing it for TV and stuff. But even on a national level, I mean, that's why Al Michaels was brutal during that Super Bowl. It's like you could tell, like, he didn't want to take any chances, like, with whether it was the pass into the end zone or a field goal. He would go, you know, he tries to drag it out, you know. So, I don't know. I guess I'm more tougher on play-by-play guys, I guess, you know.
I'm shocked because you watch a lot of games.
Yeah, no, I mean, believe me, I don't hate the guy. I mean, I don't go crazy like some of these people do, you know. But
yeah, I'm just surprised because I love, he's one of my favorites. Like, I enjoy when he does a game.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Like I said, yeah. But seeing a guy
but
like
to
Vince
me,
Scully,
it's like a big game. Like, if Buck's calling a game,
oh yeah,
it's a big game.
Yeah, but that's why I even go back to Vince Scully. He's not exactly, you know, he's pretty much down the middle and stuff, but he went borderline crazy on that Kirk Gibson home run. You know, it's like that, you know, he's gone, you know, that kind of stuff. You know, so I think it depends on the moment, I guess. That's why, you know, Michaels came up small during that Eagles Super Bowl. You know, that kind of thing. But,
I mean, you know, Kirk Gibson hits a limping around. Like, it's the all-time moment, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't know what the bloody sock. You know, I don't know what, you know, I'm sure there's been moments, you know, some of those Altuve, like, even forget about the Astros, but the series that between the Dodgers and the Astros was incredible.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely. But, yeah, so I don't know. Like I said, it's just one of those things, I guess, you know, disagree with.
No, I find it interesting. And I'm, like, fascinated by it because I don't understand it.
Yeah, well, and by the way, real quick, one more thing about that Celtics-Sixer rivalry. This is what bothers me. I mean, I respect Russell and stuff, but I'm sorry. Wilt was on the two greatest single-season teams in NBA history. That's why I want to, like, smack somebody like Bill Simmons in the face, you know, when he does that, you know. Because, you know, Wilt was on a 68-13 Sixer team, and I always wondered why they never played that one game. You know, it was like 81 games. And then, you know, that Laker 33-game winning streak team. You know, in the early 70s. I just thought, to me, that's why I always come back with these people who are anti-Wilt, you know?
Yeah. Again, you know better than I do because you're a little older.
Right.
I don't know the Wilt piece.
Yeah.
You know?
But, no, but anyway, it's always great. I'm looking forward to when you guys replay that. Hey, one more thing, too, real quick.
Yeah.
Remember after the Phillies won the World Series that year? They actually, I think it was Pat Burrell and Cole Hamels that came out for, like, a coin toss. I think it was, like, I don't know if it was a Thursday night Arizona game, you know, Thanksgiving and stuff. It was one, like, a Monday, like, one of those night games they played.
Oh,
it was great.
That's cool, man.
Yeah,
I remember that.
Yeah, and I remember the crowd going crazy. You know, like, they introduced him and they walked out to the midfield
and stuff.
That's
awesome, man. That's dynamite. So, good stuff, Vin.
Thanks,
buddy. Take it easy. Be safe. All right, we'll come back and we'll hang out.
I got another disgraceful tweet toward Joe.
Again?
Ready for this?
Yeah.
Joe Buck has a terrible voice. This is from Matt. It's flat and he gives one-word sentences. He belongs as the fourth guy on the crew.
No, but
he shouldn't be calling World Series and Super Bowls.
Oh, my God.
So he has him behind, like, Dick Stockton.
No. Come on. Yeah, understand this, that it is brevity is good. When he says one-word sentences, you're acting like it's a bad thing. When you're broadcasting for television, you gotta use brevity. Like, he's the ultimate professional. He gives his play-by-play guy a chance. Like, you're not... See, here's the problem with most play-by-play guys, is that they think they know the game as well as the analyst. And listen, they might, but it's not their job. And so they have to give the analyst a chance to chime in and analyze the play. And so you got to be, you know, you got to use action verbs, and you have to have brevity. You guys are wrong with it, man. I'm telling you.
Well, there's a lot of excitement coming up in the playback because the Eagles beat down the Cowboys, and he was on it from the beginning.
All right. It's great. Here's the beauty of it, is that we can sit here and have this kind of debate, and I think that's a great thing, that we can suspend what we're thinking about, what's going on right now, for a moment, and argue about Joe Buck. I think that's a good thing. Hey, all the great guys, great teams, and they all have the great go-to guy, right? All right, when it comes to great tomato pie, oh, I got my go-to guy. That's right. Corp Belize. Corp Belize Bakery and Deli. My go-to guys for the great tomato pie. Since 1924. How about that? We're going on 100 years for the Corp Belize family. They've been dedicating their lives to serving the highest quality tomato pies. All right, now they got four locations for your convenience: Norristown, Limerick, Audubon, and Douglasville. Now, the beauty of the Corp Belize bakeries, any of the four, you walk in and you smell the tomato pie baking in the oven, and that wafting through the whole entire bakery, right? The beautiful plucked aroma tomatoes, the olive oil, the basil, the sprinkling of the locatelli cheese. It's the best. It's incredible. I love it. Like, I'm like pregame Sunday morning. Yeah, because I'm not a big breakfast guy. So to me, the tomato pie is perfect. Have your event catered by Corp Belize Bakery and Deli. Your guests will be talking about how great the food was. Perfect for any gathering. Dessert's ridiculous. You're going to love all of them. All the great teams have a go-to guy when it comes to great tomato pie. My friends at Corp Belize Bakery and Deli are my go-to guys. See more at CorpBelizeBakery.com.
It's the Anthony Gargano Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
All right. As we get through this coronavirus and the social distancing, and we battle through this together as a community, and boy, I'll tell you, I do. I'm very proud of us here in the Delaware Valley. We band together, and as we sit here, we take our mind off of things. That's why we come to the Fanatic, to kind of take our mind off of things, talk some sports, laugh a little bit, and argue about, hey, you know, guys like Joe Buck, and we have those sports, and let's talk about it. So we have some fun with that sort of thing. And we've really had a lot of fun with the playback. Every day at 12:20, we embark on a journey into a game of the past, and we relive it. We give it to you live from the Xfinity Studios. Truist works really hard in getting all the sound. So today, one of our favorites. That's right. It's between Christmas and New Year's. The year is 2008. Week 17, the Eagles and the Cowboys. Now, the Eagles, they needed some help to get into the playoffs. It was a whole crazy deal to try to get into the playoffs. All kinds of stuff had to happen. They had to get lucky. It was one of those scores that we know, 44-6, that became iconic. The Eagles fans woke up thinking that they were going to be watching the last game of the season. The Buccaneers needed to lose to the Raiders, and the Raiders were terrible. The Bears needed to lose to the Texans, and the Texans were so-so. And, of course, the Eagles would have to beat the Cowboys to secure the wild card. Lo and behold, the Buccaneers, they lost to Oakland that day. And the Texans, they beat the Bears that day. All that was left was the Eagles to beat the Cowboys. Let's take a listen to the kickoff.
65 degrees, unseasonably warm. It is windy. Chance for rain later today. Eagles start with the football. And a terrible kickoff to start by Nick Folk. And Philadelphia will start at their own 40.
How about it? The opening kickoff portended the things to come. On that, like Joe said, 65 degrees on December the 28th. Opening drive happens. You get McNabb to Selleck for 20. And then later, a 3rd-and-7, B. West. Perhaps the only mistake of the day. Take a listen.
3rd-and-7 now for McNabb, who has to step up, and the pass is, I guess, caught and fumbled as Dallas gets back on top. The officials do not say incomplete. They say catch and fumble by Westbrook, and Dallas takes over at their own 25.
Yeah, that's what it looked to me, was that Westbrook had made the catch. Now let's just take a closer look. He has it and then turns. It looks to me like he has possession of the ball before it gets knocked out of his hands.
I didn't think that was a fumble, did you?
No, watching again today, it looked like, you know, I get he made somewhat of a football move, but I thought he dropped it before it even got touched.
So did I. I
thought it was just incomplete.
Incomplete.
Come on, exactly. B. West. Hold on to that.
Both the Eagles and Cowboys put up no points on their first drives. They both get field goals on their second drive. But then the floodgates started to open for the Birds. Take a listen who's at the game. And then take a listen to McNabb, number 5. On a big 3rd-and-7 to Buckhalter.
One of the real good guys from Major League Baseball is in attendance here from the world champion Philadelphia Phillies, Jimmy Rollins. Shortstop and leadoff hitter and the catalyst for that offense under Charlie Manuel. So they'll get their rings at the start of 2009. McNabb steps up, slides along the line, and finds a receiver for a first down and more. That's Buckhalter. Correll Buckhalter is down inside the 10.
Wow. Big play. Slides along the lines. This is why I like Joe, too. Because Joe brings up, look at this, the world champion, Phillies. Jay Rowland, managed by Charlie Manuel. Even throw in, they're going to get their rings at the start of 09. All right, let's go. 3 plays later, at the goal line, 5 takes over.
I think they've got to go for it even on 4th down if they don't make it here on 3rd down. I think it's extremely important for their psyche to punch this one in.
McNabb again signal yet. Looked like he got in. Touchdown. In a game they need to win to get into the playoffs, it's McNabb who carries it for his second touchdown of the year.
And that was the quarterback sneak that Andy has always loved, always employed. You saw him employed this year, right? You saw Patrick Mahomes. He was a big believer of the sneak. Doug is too. Doug likes to sneak it as well. All right. It wasn't all offense, though, for the Birds. The defense was outrageous. Led by the venerable defensive coordinator, Jim Johnson. Take a listen to this Eagle crowd. Take a listen to the ferocious defense.
The numbers are stunning when you look at the history for Jim Johnson, the defensive coordinator of the Eagles. And what he's been able to do against the Dallas Cowboys, the first meeting compared to the second. Trying to do it again here and turn in his usual good effort by this Philly defense and help the Eagles get into the postseason. Third and 11. Another blitz. Romo steps up and throws high for Roy Williams. Another three and out, and the third and four possessions for this Dallas offense.
How about that? The other Roy Williams, Tunis.
I hate him too.
I thought he was going to be a stud. That receiver, Roy Williams?
Was he Roy E. Williams? Lions? Which one was Roy E. Williams?
He's from the Lions.
Right.
And I thought he was going to be a stud. And he wasn't. He was a dud. All right. The defense, incredible. Eagles get the ball back. They're driving. And how about this big play? Number 5 to a rookie wide receiver out of the University of California.
Now it's third down and 9. Westbrook at the bottom of the screen. McNabb to his right. What a pass! First and goal, DeSean Jackson. What a throw from Donovan McNabb.
Well, really good job by Andy Reid and Marty Morningwig, offensive coordinator, splitting Brian Westbrook out. What that then did was it forced them to go into single coverage on the outside, and Donovan McNabb recognizes that. And you've got DeSean Jackson, the rookie, working against the best corner right now for the Dallas Cowboys and Terrence Newman, and he runs right by him.
How great is that? Tunis, brilliance of Andy Reid and Marty splitting B. West out. Imagine what the receivers look like when you got DeSean and B. West.
And Marty back.
Marty is back. That's correct.
Helped Doug out as an advisor.
And DeSean, is he crazy? He was a rookie. It was 2008. And here we are heading into 2020, the 2020 season. And DeSean Jackson still playing. Pretty wild. All right. So the big play to D-Jax, 34 yards. Three plays later, it's third and goal from the 4. Donovan played a great game, making some more magic.
What'll it be on third and goal? Westbrook again at the bottom of your screen. McNabb underneath. Buckhalter. Touchdown.
Huge 17-3 Eagles. And now here it is, just before halftime. Just under a minute to go. And actually, a little bit more than a minute to go. The Eagles with a 17-3 lead. The Cowboys are driving, trying to put up some points up before halftime. But there's a miscommunication between Romo and Williams and our old friend Sheldon Brown takes advantage.
Second and 5 for Dallas, down by 14. This one to the sideline. Williams wasn't looking for it. Sheldon Brown with the interception. And Romo and Roy Williams were not on the same page. There is a flag down in the middle of the field.
Holding offense. Number 71. Penalty is defined. First down.
You know, Joe, I'm not sure what the route was, and I'm not real sure what the throw was. Nothing looked good.
How great is that? Are you kidding me? And now you know, after listening to Romo, that Roy Williams made the mistake. Sheldon Brown capitalizes. Eagles now just about a minute to play, trying to get more points on the board, up 17-3. Reggie Brown from Georgia. Big catch and penalty. And then there's a late hit. Adam Pac-Man Jones tack on the 15. And then D-Jax. Pass interference by Terrence Newman. Oh, what we think will be the final play of the half. Take a listen.
So now what do? You have first and goal from the one. You have no timeouts remaining if you're Philadelphia. They fake the handoff throw. Touchdown, Celek. First touchdown of the year for Brent Celek. And the Eagles are 3-for-3 inside the red zone after coming in 2 for their last 12.
And Jerry Jones doesn't know what hit him.
And there it was, making that sourpuss leather face on the sidelines, doesn't know what to do. And you think it's just a cursory kickoff, right? That there's David Akers kicking the ball back just 13 seconds left before halftime. You figure Dallas will take a knee, and the Eagles will go in with a 24-3 lead at the half. But there was a fumble. Yes, a mistake. Take a listen.
Swift kick by Akers. Here is Pac-Man Jones. Pac-Man loses the football. Has it ripped out, and the Eagles take over. And with 5 seconds left, they'll have an opportunity for a field goal by David Akers.
And he nails it. It's 27-3. Birds. Oh, my. And now it's time for the defense to eat. This was the start in the second half. 3 straight drives ending with a fumble for Dallas. Here's the first, a strip sack by Brian Dawkins.
Second and 15. Another blitz from the Eagles. And knocked out of the hand by Dawkins. Fumble by Romo down the field. Clemens, a stiff arm and a touchdown.
Romo just trying to buy some time, and then you see the strip. And Chris Clemens is able to pick it up after Dawkins knocks it out. And it's a foot race between him and Mark Colombo.
Chris Clemens, remember him? He was the big end for the Birds, Chris Clemens. You spell his name with an M-O-N-S. Well, guess what? A little bit later on, they're at it again. And again, it's Dawkins. Listen closely as you can hear the impact of B-Doc on Marion Barber and what happens on the return by Yoselio Hanson.
A blitz. Yoselio Hanson on the return. It's another defensive touchdown. Dawkins stripped another.
I think the party started a while ago, but if it didn't, it sure has now.
And that party has been led by number 20.
Oh, my. Oh, my. That is awesome. Did you hear that hit? Dude, it's a crunch. It was a crunch. Anthony touchdown. You hear Dawkins in the background?
Oh, yeah. He's screaming hallelujah.
Right? Did you hear
that
him?
Was awesome.
Do it again. Play it again.
Go the back whole thing?
It. Yeah. I love it.
A blitz. Marion Barber loses the football. Jose Leo Hansen on the return. Only Romo can get close to him. It's another defensive touchdown. Dawkins stripped another.
I can't get enough of that. I swear to God. Dawkins, that was ridiculous. This is such an incredible game. Oh, my. And then here's the third straight Cowboys fumble. Romo gets stripped by Chris Clemens. And this time, Trevor Laws recovers.
Romo's in trouble again. Clemens up his back, knocks it out. Trevor Laws on the fumble recovery.
Well, we've seen this act before. I mean, it's just Tony trying to make a play and then just not understanding that there's pressure behind him and Clemens being able to knock it out.
I mean, it's just outrageous. What a performance. Perhaps the greatest Eagles performance under Jim Johnson in the most meaningful game, a game they had to win to make the playoffs. What a day. How about this? Before the Eagles got the ball for the final time to run out the clock, they forced three and outs and three fumbles from the Cowboys offensive series. Outrageous. Complete dominance. Here's the final sack of the game by Clemens. And really, what a way to honor one of the great defensive coordinators of all time, Jim Johnson.
Bollinger is swallowed up by Clemens, who's had a fantastic day. And they just keep adding to the defensive statistics to put a smile on the face of their coordinator, Jim Johnson.
Pretty cool, right, Junis? That was an incredible day. What an amazing day, Junis. The defense was ridiculous. Absolutely dominating performance. 44-6. All right, we'll come back, and hopefully you remember that game. We'll talk about it. We'll also talk about a Tim McManus story about why the Eagles passed on DeAndre Hopkins. So we'll go from back then to the current state of the Birds. That'll be next. It's Cuz Radio right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
It's the Anthony Gargano Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
Welcome back. Cuz Radio with Chew is hanging out on this Tuesday. Hope everybody is well, is safe, is sane. Check in, and we'd love to talk to you about what you're doing and how you're navigating this thing. In the interim, we'll get some more football for you. So Tim McManus wrote a piece on ESPN, and it's funny. So he talks about the whole DeAndre Hopkins thing, and he says, well, the reason why they're not going to sign Hopkins is because of, like, basically saying fiscal sanity, right? That the deal is Hopkins is pushing for a new mega deal, even though he has 3 years remaining on his five-year, $81 million contract. So he thinks that the Eagles would not rip up that deal and give him a new one, and that would set a precedent the Eagles have long tried to avoid. But that's the reason why. And so he tries to make the case that, you know, well, you know, because the Eagles are showing fiscal sanity, it's okay. Now, this is where I disagree with Timmy. The reason why first of all, I would have done it, but the reason why the Eagles can't do it is because they gave up too much money they flushed away with Alshon Jeffrey. Like, so let's not make them some bastion of, oh, well, look, they're being smart. No, they were stupid in that extension for Alshon Jeffrey. I mean, let's be real. I love the guy. I love Howard to death. But that Alshon extension was a death knell. And that's the reason why they can't pay DeAndre Hopkins. Right or wrong?
No, totally right. We got a great tweet. This is from Joseph Giordano. He goes, hear me out. Nick Foles is in Chicago. We want Alshon off the books. Foles-Alshon combo was great. We sent Alshon to Chicago for a seventh-round pick. What do you think?
I'm in.
He goes, we wash our hands and everyone wins.
No, they're not stupid. So they're not going to take the contract. But I'm in. I'll send him back to Chicago. I don't care about Foles. First of all, could you imagine in Chicago that you're going, oh my God, Nick Foles, your quarterback. You've been waiting for quarterback. Now all of a sudden you get Alshon Jeffrey back, who was poison with the Bears. Remember when he left Chicago. And I hate to say it because we were all excited. I was excited they got Jeffrey. But he turned, you know, again, that whole Wentz thing, he got exposed. And I to this day, don't understand the extension. The two things I don't understand are the extension for Jeffrey, and I don't get the J.J. Arcega-Whiteside pick. Those are the two greatest mysteries to me. Oh, we got him? Oh, man, let's get him on the line. One of the greats to relive that incredible 44-6 game and his incredible, illustrious career. You hear him with Mikey Miss. God, he's the best. The great Brian Westbrook is on the Comcast Business Hotline. B. West, how you faring, man?
You know what, Anthony? I am, you know, for what's going on, of course, across our country, I'm doing well. We're here bunkered in Maryland with the kids and family. And, you know, it's funny, and I'm not sure if your kids are going through this, but my kids are certainly going through it. I was my oldest, and she's in the first grade, and so her school has decided to do everything online.
Yeah.
Sounds like a great idea in principle. Until now, as a parent that hasn't been in school for the last 20-plus years, I'm trying to figure out how they're teaching these kids new math and all these different subjects, and my daughter actually is teaching me at this point, so... it's interesting times, but I'm glad to be here with my family. How are you doing, my friend?
Same as you, brother. You know what's funny? I did the same thing. So there was a packet because my Mossy's in first grade. And so there was a packet, and it was the math packet. And, like, it show your work. And you got to show your work about the apples and the whatevers. And I'm going, dude, here's how you get to 18. Like, do this.
No, they don't want just the answer. They want to know. They want you to show your work, which means that whatever we learned 20 plus exactly. years ago, that's obsolete. That's not how you do it anymore.
Exactly.
It's pretty funny.
Oh my God, you're so right, brother. Oh man, you go. Oh my God, first grade. Then the fourth guy, get the fourth grader. Forget about it. I have no idea what he's doing. It is. I'm glad that everybody's safe, and as we wait this day, it's so crazy. But B West, it's such a crazy time, man. It really is.
Very crazy time, but I truly do believe we'll get through this. And when we get on the other side of this thing, I think it will be much better for it in the end. So, you know, the other thing, Anthony, I just have to be honest. And I said this to Mike last week and the week before. I said, you know, it's times like this that we see the true humanity in people. And yeah. Over the last few years, there have been so many crazy things going on in our world. And we've seen kind of hatred, our people divided. But during situations like this, we've seen people helping each other in ways that we haven't seen in a very long time. We've seen people supporting each other and supporting humans all together. And I think it's been kind of special to see that, even though we're going through some craziness here in our world.
Oh, that's beautiful. You're so right. I love your outlook, brother. I really do. So we do this thing every day where we're reliving a game, right? And we do, you know, Sixers, Eagles, Flyers, Phillies, the whole thing. So today we're reliving the 44-6 game. What do you remember about that day, B. West?
You know, so that was the game. It's probably the last game of the season, right?
Yes,
the last game of our regular season.
It was December 28th, 2008.
That's right. Yeah. So when we going into that game, so we didn't have the best regular season. We struggled. We were up and down pretty much all season long. And it really came down for us that we had to win. We had to beat the Cowboys, but we needed some help. So we needed the Raiders to win. And I think we need someone else, another team to win. And I just remember vaguely that Michael Bush, who was actually Ben Simmons' brother-in-law, I believe, he scored a touchdown in the Raiders game.
Yes.
And they ended up winning, which we needed that to happen.
Yes, and the Texans. You need the Texans to beat the Bears.
We needed the Texans to win. So now we're kind of in the locker room, and we're saying all to ourselves, okay, the Raiders, they did their job. The Texans, they did their job. And now as a team, all we had to do is to go out in front of the best fans in the world and beat up on the Cowboys, something that we wanted to do anyway, that we hated that team with so much passion. Anyway, and really that game was surreal for me because the only thing I remember from the game really is watching the game. So it was kind of one of those feelings where I wasn't even in the game because our defense was on the field so much. They dominated so much. I felt like they were getting interceptions and sacks and fumble recovery, and they were scoring. And so they would just go right back in the field. And I'll never forget this. I remember Doc running and jumping over someone, maybe it might have been Romo at the time, stripping the ball from him.
Yes.
And someone else recovered it. And I just remember running to Doc and just shaking him and throwing him around. And this is the first time, and probably the only time I've done this to Brian Dawkins, the great Brian Dawkins. But I'm so excited. I'm throwing him around. I'm shaking him because he forced the fumble. And I just remember our team basically running away with that game to the point that I don't know that we even played in the third or fourth quarters as the starters. Because the game got ugly very, very quickly.
Yes,
and again,
yes.
We talk about the best fans in the world. It's reasons like that game in particular. When we walked out of that locker room and we walked into that stadium, Lincoln Financial, I mean, we felt this in the vet, but Lincoln Financial was a little bit different. It was shaking. I felt that the ground shaking at that time because our fans wanted to win that much. And as a team, we just kind of grabbed on that momentum. We grabbed on that excitement, and our defense, quite honestly, just ran away with the day that game. And again, this is a funny thing because the only time this ever happened to me was when I was in San Francisco, and I truly wasn't playing. So what happened when I was in San Francisco in the pregame? I felt like because I wasn't playing an awful lot, I might have played two or three plays per game for the first 5 or 6 weeks. I felt like I was watching people warm up for a game, like as if I was a coach, right?
Wow.
And then so that game, when we played against the Cowboys, that 44-6 game, I felt like I was a coach watching our defense dominate against that football team of the Cowboys. And it was great to watch.
That is awesome. You know, it was great, too, in that game that I was this Marty's idea. They split you out. So it's you and D-Jax, or you split you out at wide out. And so you got opposite D-Jax. And, you know, with you two on the outside, they had to go man. And there was a couple big plays down the field, pass interference penalties, because they had you split out at wide receiver.
You know, so back in, this is what I'm saying, back in the day, like I'm 100 years old, but back in the day, when they played defenses, there was a lot of base defenses. So really, it was four down linemen and three linebackers. And as long as you had two running backs in the game, they would go that defense, right? And so what we did in this situation, we put myself and the father was Buckhalter at the time, we put us both in the backfield at the same time, right? And so now they went base defense where they had four linemen and three linebackers. And then after, you know, we get to the line of scrimmage, we disperse. So I went to the outside, and now they have to make a decision as a defense. Do they want to put a cornerback on me and have a safety or somebody else, a linebacker, on DeSean Jackson, which was a huge mismatch? Or do they want to put the corner inside with D-Jack? At this point, they'll put a line, and then put the linebacker outside with me, and then we have a mismatch with open field with me on the linebacker or safety. And so there was kind of a game plan type of thing that Marty would do from time to time just to see. First of all, it makes the defense declare exactly what defense they're in. Because if the linebacker goes outside with me and the cornerback's inside with D-Jack, that means they're a man-to-man. If they stay with the cornerback outside and the linebacker stays inside, then they're probably in some type of zone, right? And so we declared the defense. We understood what defense they're in. And now we got a matchup between myself and a linebacker. And I took pride in every time I had a matchup against a linebacker, or safety for that matter, that I had to win that matchup because I knew Donovan was going to be looking for me to catch the football. And so there were some opportunities there. I don't really remember having a very good game. In that game, I don't know that we needed me to have a good game because we were so dominant, but I just remember watching it like, wow, I think Buckhalter might have scored in that game.
It got
me pretty quickly. It was a great game for us, for the Eagles fans as well.
I was that's so awesome. I love talking about that. It's amazing how quickly, because you're right, this isn't back in the day 100 years ago, that, you know, you're only talking a decade, not even, when it comes to your career. And, you know, defenses, nobody's in base anymore. It's when people talk about drafting a linebacker. You know, the Eagles don't need, you're never in base defense anymore. It's ridiculous. It's crazy.
Yeah, you're rarely in base, and here's the reason why. Because so many teams have gone three wide receiver sets and four wide receiver sets, and now you have tight ends like Zach Ertz and Dallas Goedert, who, you know, I think Dallas does a much better job of blocking at the line of scrimmage, but Zach Ertz is basically a receiver. He does a great job of finding his way open, and so as a defense, you're saying, well, we can't match up 4-3 with our base defensive lineup in there versus what they're going to do offensively. So that's why you have so many nickel guys in there, guys like Malcolm Jenkins in there that can play the run as well as the pass. And, you know, things have changed. The league continues to evolve and the league continues to change. And that was one of the changes that they did maybe 10 or so years ago.
Listen, I know you're going to run. Thank you, brother. Listen, I love you, man. You are the greatest. Please be safe and God bless you and the family.
Thank you, brother. God bless you and your family, too. Andrew, you as well. You guys be safe, and to all the Phillies, continue to take care of each other because, you know, in this world, that's all we have is each other. Let's make sure that everyone knows how special that they are to you at this time, especially with all the craziness going on.
Amen, you, brother. Amen, brother. There is the great Brian Westbrook. You'll hear him with Mikey Miss on Fridays at 4 o'clock. I love that dude. He's terrific. And he was such a great, great player. It's fun kind of reliving his career at times, Junis. I could talk to him forever. So he would give Condulus to give us a few minutes to relive that game. I hope you guys enjoy this stuff. We got to figure out what we're doing for tomorrow. We're back to Sixers, Junis. We're a little Sixer action tomorrow.
Yes, and people who are tweeting in to play 2001 Game 7 against the Raptors, we did that last week. So it's got to be another one.
All right. We need some Sixer games. So think about some of the games from the past. We'll narrow it down, but tweet in some of the Sixer games that you would like to relive, and then we'll do it. We'll put it out for on the poll and let you know who wins, and we'll do that tomorrow. But thanks to B West, and great job on the 44-6.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.